And welcome, video version viewers. It is the April 12th, 2018 version, like I just said. And Mark Zuckerberg on the Insta. If you're on the video version, you can see him. This is actually not really him. This is just a wax structure of him and his bare feet sitting at the Madame Tussauds thing.
YouTube is a place for people to share their ideas. If by people you mean 13-year-old girls, and by ideas you mean how they love the Jonas Brothers. I'm just kidding, but let's be honest, that's a hefty majority.
Bo Burnham, everyone.
And if you don't believe me, well then you must be a noob.
So it's a shooting at YouTube.
You don't know what you're missing, just try searching women kissing. It's YouTube, it's what this country's been needing. A generation of kids who don't waste their time reading. Am I the only one that thinks that Lisa Nova's hot and Chris Crocker's not?
Chris Crocker, that's a name you haven't heard for a while. On April 3rd, 2018 at 12:46 p.m. Pacific, a shooting attack occurred at YouTube headquarters, which is 12 miles south of San Francisco. A good story. The suspect was later identified as a 38-year-old woman named Nassem Najafi Aghadam. She entered through an exterior parking garage, approached an outdoor patio, and opened fire with a Smith & Wesson 9mm caliber semi-automatic pistol. Aghadam wounded three people, one of them critically, before fatally shooting herself. Let's get some information. Her weapon had a capacity of 10 rounds. She emptied one magazine before reloading. She took her own life with a gunshot wound to the head 2 days shy of her 39th birthday. Helicopter footage later showed a large hole in broken glass in the building's lobby doors. Initial reports incorrectly described the shooting as that of a scorned lover in a domestic dispute shooting her boyfriend. I wonder why the news would think that in the first place. It's a woman, must have been a crazy lady going in after a guy. Is that what they just assumed? Let's see. The perpetrator was identified, blah, blah, blah. A vegan activist and bodybuilder. She was born in Iran and immigrated to the United States. She was a registered member of the Baha'i faith, and described how veganism was aligned with her religion. So the Baha faith is a religion teaching the essential worth of all religions. Oh, what? Stupid. Her content went viral on Iranian social media and she drew widespread attention. However, it appears that the lady was very upset that YouTube had gone and changed some of their settings and some of their policies regarding monetization of her videos. And she'd complained to people that she's getting... I am getting 10 cents now per video, so she was making no money anymore. She complained about YouTube on her website, writing, YouTube filtered my channels to keep them from getting views, and that it demonetized most of her videos. Here's a video about her.
The YouTube shooter, Nassim Aghadam, was widely known on Iranian social media as Nassim Sabz, which means green Nassim.
They have not said a single word that I understand.
Because of her advocacy for animal rights, healthy living, and veganism. Her specific style of videos made her relatively famous among Iran's growing YouTube and Instagram influencers.
So most of her videos are shot with her against a green screen, it looks like, because she's got all these different high-quality backgrounds, and it looks actually really good. Like, she must have had a legit studio, because a lot of times when people are doing green screen work, they get this haze around them. You can tell that they're standing in front of a green screen and it looks kind of crappy. All of her videos, production wise like with the shot, look okay.
This is one showing a rabbit where she explains the differences between vegetarianism and being vegan. In another video, she explains the benefits of eating a papaya. One of her most well-known videos here is one where she is wearing a revealing purple dress. Don't believe what you see is a message appearing in the video screen.
I'm being discriminated and filtered on YouTube, and I'm not the only one. And if you go and check my videos, you see that my new videos hardly get views.
She also criticizes you.
Oh, yeah, she is mad. Oops. So she walks into YouTube, shoots everyone up, and that's about it. Shoots herself in the head. Did not injure anyone. sorry, didn't kill anyone. Here's another one of her videos where she does squats in front of a Jewish flag. And they use one of Puke's favorite drops. I think she does a solid 2.5 minutes of squats. That's actually not that easy to do. And it's all just in front of the Jewish star. So, anyway, goes in, shoots everyone, shoots herself in the face, and that's it. Did not make much of an impact. And then the media goes, whoa, here's the thing, and it's done, right? You don't hear about it anymore. And then all of the gun rights people go, ooh, I wonder why they aren't talking about the YouTube shooter anymore. Could it be because she's a left vegetarian and is a woman and wasn't using an assault rifle, so nobody cares? And I'm like, probably not. It's probably just because she only didn't kill anyone. And there's a lot of shootings that go down where there's no deaths, and that's the last you hear of them, right? Because on to the next death. Come on, let's do it. Now, what really upset me was I was trying to find some of her videos, and I couldn't find any of them on YouTube. I had to go to LiveLeak to even get that one with the squats. And I'm like, what's going on? Is her channel down? Why would her channel be down? Yes, they pulled her channel down. I don't believe it. Now, it makes sense. You would normally pull down the channel of a shooter because that's just going to get them more attention. However, you know whose channel is not down still? Elliot Rodger. And he's still got a lot of solid content. If you head on over to his YouTube channel. The only video of his that was ever pulled down, I believe, was the last one where he was like, tomorrow is the day of retribution. So if you don't remember, he's got tons of good content like this.
I should be the one with the girls.
It's a little quiet.
I mean, look at me. I'm gorgeous. But you girls don't see it. I don't understand why you're so repulsed by me. Why won't you give me a chance? It's ridiculous. I mean, the other day, I was doing some grocery shopping at Trader Joe's. And I was, of course, all alone, as I always am. Which makes me feel so miserable. Anyway, I was doing my shopping and
I'm on the edge of my seat to find out what happens while he was doing shopping.
See this, like, disgusting-looking loser. Well, he's a loser in my opinion.
Huh?
And he walks in with these two beautiful blonde girls at his side. I couldn't believe my eyes.
What? Nobody has two girlfriends.
Insulted by
must
that.
Must have been his sister.
I should be the one with the girls.
Anyway, I can't get enough Elliot Rodger content, so head on over to his channel and check him out. He's still up and running. So, this weekend we had Mark Zuckerberg sitting in front of the Senate. For some reason, he had to go and testify to senators. Actually, he did not. He was there voluntarily. And this is related to the Cambridge Analytica data spill that we covered last show or a couple shows ago, where a bunch of data from Facebook went out through the developer portal. And then was shared with this company, Cambridge Analytica, which the Russians then used to let Trump get elected. Mark Zuckerberg faced dozens of senators and the American television audience to take hard questions on how Facebook has handled user data and faced efforts to subvert democracy. We didn't take a broad enough view of our responsibility, and that was a big mistake. It was my mistake, and I'm sorry, the co-founder and CEO of Facebook, uncharacteristically wearing a suit, said in his opening remarks. Because they're saying he normally wears a hoodie. I started Facebook, I run it, and I'm responsible for what happens here. Zuckerberg testified Tuesday before a joint session of the Senate Commerce and Judiciary Committees. He spoke for more than 4 hours. If you want the full experience, you can watch the video above or on C-SPAN here. The leaders of their committees in their opening remarks signaled that the status quo was not satisfactory and called for changes, voluntary or mandatory, to promote transparency and prevent abuse. So a bunch of senators are going and getting their PR points up by grilling Zuckerberg about his data spill. And this is what the American people want. We hate Facebook. However, please, government, keep all our data anyway. By the way, the government probably loves Facebook because probably they're just feeding all of their databases directly into the government's database anyway, right, everyone? Let's listen to some things that happened. So there were a lot of questions. Some of them came from the senator. Some of them didn't understand what was happening. Sometimes Zuckerberg had to clarify questions. A person asked something along the lines of, how many categories of data do you store? And he's like, I don't know what you mean, right? Does the lady mean how many database records exist? Because that would be a lot. Other people said, why are you selling data? And Zuckerberg said, we don't sell data. Someone said, how do you run a business without your users paying for it? And he said, we have ads. all right, so let's listen.
Are you willing to go back and work on giving me a greater right to erase my data?
Yeah, so a lot of these people are asking Zuckerberg questions about stuff that either already exists or the guy doesn't under... They're not IT people. They're old senators, right? So they don't really know what's going on.
Senator, you can already delete any of the data that's there or delete all of your data.
Are you willing to expand that? Work on expanding that?
Senator, I think we already do what you're referring to.
Are you willing to expand my right to prohibit you from sharing my data?
Senator, again, I believe that you already have that control.
Right, so the point being that if you have a Facebook account, apparently you can go into the settings and you can tell them, what things can I not share with other organizations, right? And Zuckerberg would say, of course, you have all the control to not share your data with third parties, which is true. Nobody should be installing these stupid apps that say, what lion from Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe are you, right? And then it shares all your data. Also, apparently, you can go into your settings and block certain things. I haven't gone through it and figured it out because I don't care. Now, by default, all of the settings are probably turned on to share. So is it wrong of them to have it turned on like it's an opt-out versus an opt-in system? I don't know. But the point is, a lot of the questions for 8 straight hours or whatever were Zuckerberg saying, yeah, that exists, or we're working on that, or I don't know, and I'm going to get back to you on like certain questions. Because to be fair, he is in front of the Senate, and I believe that it's like a sworn testimony, meaning if you lie and it's proven, you are going to the liar's jail.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Zuckerberg, would you be comfortable sharing with us the name of the hotel you stayed in last night?
No.
If you've messaged anybody this week, would you share with us the names of the people you've messaged?
Senator, no, I would probably not choose to do that publicly here.
I think that may be what this is all about. Your right to privacy, the limits of your right to privacy, and how much you give away in modern America in the name of, quote, connecting people around the world.
This from the organization that had the NSA and way more information than Facebook had. Well, probably about the same amount of information. So again, if I go to Google and I say, okay, Google, where am I staying tonight? It will pull up my hotel reservation if I had one, and it will tell me where I'm staying and where I need to drive to. That means Google knows, right? Maybe it's encrypted on their side. Maybe their employees couldn't look at that, but I doubt it. I'm sure that someone there could easily look that up and be like, oh, Nick has a reservation at that place tonight, right?
Question basically of what information Facebook's collecting, who they're sending it to, and whether they ever ask me in advance my permission to do that. Is that a fair thing for a user of Facebook to expect?
Zuckerberg's going to say, you do have control over all of your data.
Yes, Senator. I think everyone should have control over how their information is used. And as we've talked about in some of the other questions, I think that is laid out in some of the documents. But more importantly, you want to give people control in the product itself. So the most important way that this happens across our services is that every day people come to our services to choose to share photos or send messages. And every single time they choose to share something, they're they have a control right there about who they want to share it with.
Right. Okay. And the other thing that was clarified in the speech is that Zuckerberg said something along the lines of, we don't share our data with our advertisers either. So the Congress people would go, how much data do you share with advertisers? And Zuckerberg said, we don't share data with advertisers. Advertisers share data with us. Like they say, I want to sell skis. And then Facebook themselves say, okay, we have a person over here who wants to sell skis, and we have a group of people here who like skis. We don't necessarily tell the company that is selling skis about the people who want skis, right? We just take the ad and we present it to them. So they're playing the middleman, so they don't share the data externally. I don't know. Everyone's super mad, and it's dumb, and Zuckerberg's just here for some PR stunt, and everyone's questioning him for some PR stunt because Facebook's not the only company doing it. They're all doing it. I don't know. Maybe Facebook is the worst. I don't know. Another person asked Mark Zuckerberg, hey, I was talking to my friend, and we were talking about my dead brother, and then 2 minutes later, I looked on my phone, and it was like, oh, it's an in memorandum of my dead brother, but I hadn't looked him up. We were just talking about it. So anyway, people were asking him, does Facebook use the microphone to share ads with people? Because there's a ton of people that claim this happens. You sit with your friend and you talk about cat food. You don't even have a cat, right? You say, I'd really love to eat some cat food for breakfast tomorrow. And then all of a sudden, you got a cat food ad. Does it happen or does it not happen?
I hear it all the time, including from my own staff. Yes or no, does Facebook use audio obtained from mobile devices to enrich personal information about its users?
No.
Good.
Senator, let me be clear on this. I mean, so you're talking about this conspiracy theory that gets passed around that we listen to what's going on your microphone and use that for ads.
Right.
We don't do that. To be clear, we do allow people to take videos on their devices and share those. And of course, videos also have audio. So we do, while you're taking a video, record that and use that to make the service better by making sure that your videos have audio. But I think is pretty clear. But I just wanted to make sure I was exhaustive there.
Well, I appreciate that. No.
And he also said another time that I was watching, it's normally coincidence or it's that someone did subconsciously look it up. Not subconsciously, but did look it up and didn't remember looking it up or something. So anyway, they're going to deny this to the end of the earth until someone outright proves them or leaks the code or something that they have been using the microphone this whole time. Do I believe they are? I don't know. Do I care? Not really. But people are dead set on the fact that Facebook is using the microphone to serve you ads, and they go, that's very creepy, which I guess it is, but until they use it to, like, convict you of a crime or something, who cares? And they couldn't use it to convict you of a crime without admitting it, without saying, oh, yeah, we actually have been recording your conversations for years, and here's all of the things you've said about that a bank robbery you were conspiring to commit, right? Springfield school van driver charged with raping 13-year-old student, bail set at $25,000. So this is an interesting story. A Springfield school van driver is facing child rape charges after allegedly sexually assaulting a 13-year-old girl while transporting her to after-school therapy sessions. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. She's going to be going to a lot more therapy now. Alvin W. Wilson, 24, of Springfield, pleaded not guilty Friday in Springfield District Court to 5 counts of rape of a child by force. Assistant Director, District Attorney, blah, 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 said the defendant forced the victim to perform sex acts in the van and at his grandmother's home in Springfield. He worked for a transportation company hired by the girls' charter school. In late January, the girl was overheard telling another student about smoking marijuana and having sex with her van driver, the report said. When questioned, the girl denied it doing anything improper, but later told her grandmother about sexual encounters with the driver, according to the arrest report. Okay, so she said, she told someone, I was smoking marijuana and banging the van driver, which, by the way, this van driver looks like, anyway. When questioned, the girl denied doing anything improper, but later told her grandmother about sexual encounters with the driver. What? Why would you? Okay, anyway. During an interview with police, the girl described a scar running across Wilson's stomach and picked out his grandmother's home while being driven through the neighborhood, the report said. Oh, that's not good. Okay. So they were like, all right, where is his grandmother's home? If you really did have sex in it and smoke pot. So they drove around and she said that one. And they were like, oh, that is the right one. The state asked for $100,000 cash bail, citing the new charges and Wilson's court record, which includes an arrest for firearms charges and an open case involving an alleged assault and battery on a pregnant woman. Goodness. The defense lawyer opposed the bail request and said the charges are based on uncorroborated allegations made by a teenager with a history of depression and suicidal behavior. Right? Wilson never had physical contact and barely spoke to the girl, who always rode in the back of the van, the defense attorney says. Wilson's girlfriend often rode with him in the van during the time the alleged sex acts took place, and his relatives are always home at his grandmother's house. Doesn't say why that's relevant. I mean, it implies, right? It implies that, oh, he would have never done this with the girlfriend around and the grandmother around. Didn't say that straight up. The girl could have read Wilson's name on his driver's badge and could have seen the scar from photos on his Facebook page. In any case, her description of a horizontal scar was inaccurate. It's a vertical scar, the defense attorney said. No other evidence exists in this case, she added. He has several arrests but has no convictions on his adult record. The pending case involves an alleged assault on his pregnant girlfriend, who denies that Wilson never struck her and has repeatedly asked the prosecutors to drop the charges. He's lost his job and cannot afford the bail, so he's in jail. Blah, blah, blah. So I'm like, his Facebook page. Let's see if there's anything there. There wasn't much. However, there is a post on March 31st of this year. It's by it's on his page, but it reads, "It's his girl. Anyone who knows Alvin doesn't even have to think twice. Alvin ain't do that shit. That's all I'm saying in his page. Anyone who thinks otherwise can delete him." Right? Now, I thought about messaging the account and being like, "Hey, you up for an interview on newswithnick.com?" But I don't know. I'm a little hesitant to get involved. That 5 counts of raping a child, that's not some, like, I'm very upset about that Santa joke, right? I don't really want to get involved in that. What if they're like, oh, my God, they made fun of me on this News with Nick. All right, we're getting that guy. Slander, libel, whatever we're going to get him on. We are sending the Wilson gang out, right? We got a van now. I ain't got no job. I got nothing to do. And I need bail money. So let's go, right? That'd be scary. Handcuffed woman allegedly steals police car after officer stops her in a stolen vehicle. A woman slipped her cuffs and stole a police car after she was arrested on allegations that she had been driving a stolen vehicle. According to the Tulsa police, officers arrested Angie Lynn Frost. Following a traffic stop early Friday, she was driving a black Mazda 3. Ooh. Someone I know has a Mazda 3, right? I'm not even sure what that is. The officer whose patrol vehicle Frost is accused of stealing ran the Mazda's tag number through a database and indicated that the vehicle had been reported stolen a few days before. He had pulled up behind the vehicle and initiated the traffic stop. The lady told the officer she had borrowed the vehicle from a friend. A woman had reported to police on Thursday that her son took the vehicle without permission. So someone owns the car, the son took it, and then it's reported stolen. Like, you're an idiot. What kind of life are you living if you have to report your own son for taking your car and just calling it stolen? So it gets into the database as stolen, right? Then they run the plate. It's stolen. So now the lady has it for some reason. Who knows how she borrowed it? And it's marked as a stolen car. So now it's like, detained Frost in his vehicle while investigating the stolen vehicle. I heard the sound of the electric door locks from inside my police car. The officer states in the affidavit, I turned around and observed that Frost had slipped her handcuffs to the front and was climbing over the driver's seat. So wait, you can get from the back of a cop car to the front? I thought the whole point was the back was like, you couldn't get there. Isn't that where they put the canine in the canine units too? Otherwise the dog would be like all over the place. Maybe it's different? Frost put the patrol vehicle into drive, cut the steering wheel to the left, and sped away, according to the affidavit. Backing officers dispatched to the call followed her until she abandoned the vehicle in the 3800 block of police captured her again attempting to run up the stairs of an apartment building. My goodness, how dumb do you have to be? All right, I'm in a little bit of trouble because they think I stole this car, but I didn't really. I just borrowed it. So how about, here's the best plan I can think of. I'm going to steal this cop car and drive it GTA style across town. Officers booked Frost into the Tulsa County Jail on complaints of larceny of an automobile, possession of a stolen vehicle, escape from arrest, resisting arrest, and driving under a suspended driver's license. She's being held in lieu of $2,000 bond. $2,000? That seems so cheap. I can do all of those things, steal a cop car, run across town, get tackled in my apartment building stairs, and it's like, $2,000, right? I mean, obviously that's not the fine, that's the bond, but still. Someone in the comment section says, this happens entirely too often nowadays. No one who was suspected of committing crime sat in my police car uncuffed. It is constitutionally sound to detain someone while investigating a crime and cuffing them. I also used to cuff people through the back door window frame so I could see them during a vehicle search. Wait, I'm really confused. Oh, it's some weird guy. Anyway, so I'm like, let's see if there's any information on this case. I couldn't find any information on the case. However, you can look up people's criminal records in the Oklahoma State Courts Network. So Angie Frost, she has count one of larceny of automobile, count two, possession of stolen vehicle, count three, driving under suspension, and count four, attempting to obstruct an officer in violation of blah, blah, blah. And she has a whole bunch of other charges. That's all, I'm in the one case. Yeah, but you can go back to her account, in the court records. Actually find out where she lives, or at least what towns she's lived in, and then see all of her other charges that have been pending. So that's cool. So I played a game the other day. It is called The Beginner's Guide, and it's one of those adventure games on Steam. Now, this is the part of the show where Nick reviews a game, and I play these games sometimes that are like walking simulators. And now at first, so like Firewatch, and I've talked about this on the show a long time ago, where Firewatch is a game where you play as this fat kid in the woods and you just walk around uncovering the story of the woods or whatever's happening. You talk to this girl over your walkie-talkie, right? And at first, when I heard people call these types of games walking simulators, I thought, oh, that's pretty funny. They're insulting it by calling it a walking simulator. But no, they actually are embracing this tag. So if you go into Steam, you can actually see, this game is tagged as walking simulator, which sounds extremely boring if you're not a gamer, right? You go, I can walk all the time. I don't need to walk simulate unless I'm a handicapman. What is the point of having a walking simulator, right? So it's this game where you're supposed to go through and uncover the story of a family, right? So I just played the game called What Remains of Edith Finch a couple of weeks ago. And that game is a walking simulator, and it is not bad, and I won't spoil it, right? So it's okay, play it. Now, this other game, on the other hand, is called The Beginner's Guide. And a lot of people who recommended What Remains of Edith Finch also recommended The Beginner's Guide, and it's by the makers of The Stanley Parable. So here's the introduction, or the trailer, or whatever it's called. The Beginner's Guide is a narrative video game from Davey Redden, the creator of The Stanley Parable. It lasts about an hour and a half and has no traditional mechanics, no goals or objectives. Instead, it tells the story of a person struggling to deal with something they do not understand.
Let's say you sit down at a stranger's computer. You start opening up files and looking through stuff, and eventually you come to a folder that just says, My Work. So you open it, and you click on a random file, and it's a video game that looks like this. If you had to guess, what would you say you know about this person right now? Like, maybe they're kinda goofy. Okay, you close that, you scroll down a bit, and you open up a new file. It's another game. Do you think this person is happy? Are they unhappy? Now another one. What do you think is comfortable for this person? What puts them at ease? Do you think they're lonely? What's missing in their life? Keep going, open another file. Let's look at all of them. Let's unpack this person. Are they upset about something or fighting something? What do you think makes this person angry? What kinds of friends do they have? Do they even enjoy making video games at all? Take all of these images, hold them in your mind, and now try to imagine, without ever having met this person, who they are. Okay, let's do it.
So that's the game. You go in and you play, quote-unquote play. Again, it's a walking simulator, so there's nothing to accomplish. All of these games that are, you walk around, see some scenery, are told something by a narrator, and then you move on to the next section. And I always expect that these things are like, oh man, nothing makes any sense. But at the end, it will all come together. There will be some twist that makes all of the things that we've been doing all come together into one final moment. Okay. I don't know. Not a lot of times. I feel like these games are trying to be hipster in the sense that they go, no. The entire point was that there was nothing to figure out. So the beginner's guide sucks balls, even though it says very positive for all the reviews. So if you want to go play it, play it. I won't give you more. I won't give you a ton of details about what the point of the story was. There is a point, and maybe I just don't get it. Maybe I'm the man who walks into an art gallery and I look at art. And everyone else goes, it's so beautiful. I can really understand what the artist is feeling here. And I go, no, there's nothing here. Right? So I look at some of the reviews and they go, I played the beginner's guide without knowing anything about it, not knowing what to expect, and an especially great way to approach this game. It has some fantastic moments and it kept me engaged the whole way through. I highly recommend that you play this game and I'm excited to see what the developers come up with next. Next review says, you'll cry playing this. Don't say you won't. You'll cry. Yeah, I cried because it was so stupid. Let's see. It was a fantastic game. I loved the message it was trying to send. Touching and realistic. Makes you wonder what happened in the past. You sit in the end of the game thinking with a lot of questions and theories. It's really good. You'll understand if you try it. Okay. It's completely possible I don't get it, but I really don't get it. It's like, here's a piece of art. You're just supposed to accept it for what... No, it didn't make any sense, right? Okay? That's my review of The Beginner's Guide. So go play What Remains of Edith Finch. If you like walking simulators, it's probably one of the better ones. But again, a lot of these stories, you expect a twist to come or you expect everything to come together in the end and it doesn't. It's like, okay, dumb. Miraculous. A teen survives 12 hours in the Los Angeles sewage system. A 13-year-old boy was rescued Monday after falling into a river of sewage in Los Angeles, getting swept away and spending more than 12 hours in the toxic environment of the city's maze-like underground pipeline system. Jesse Hernandez had been playing with other children on wooden planks over an access portal to the sewage system during a family outing Sunday at the Los Angeles Park. That's what I do as a kid. Oh, hey, kids. Hey, guys. You want to go play on a bunch of planks? This is with a new planking. Now the teens are... Their planking is that they put a plank over a very dangerous thing and they jump up and down on it. It's called the Plank Challenge, and they see who... the sewer plank challenge, and they see if it breaks and they end up in the sewer system. Oh my god, show name, sewer plank challenge. Sorry, Jesse Hernandez has been playing blah, blah, blah. When the plank broke, Jesse fell about 25 feet and landed in fast moving sewage. Other children immediately notified adults, who called 911, initiating a frantic and exhaustive 12-hour search of the labyrinthine. Labyrinthine? Is that like latrine, only labyrinthine? Underground pipes using cameras propped on flotation devices. Huh. Rescuers finally found Jesse after seeing images of handprints on a sewage pipe. A sanitation crew rushed to the area and opened a manhole. Yeah, if they were real heroes, one guy would be like, he'd grab like a radio, he'd grab like a life vest, and he'd go, I'm going in. I'll radio when I find him. And he jumps in and he just sees where the sewage goes. And then he finally tries to find the kid. Right? No. But they are too scared to do that, to jump into the sewage themselves to save a child. Rescuers finally found Jesse after seeing images of handprints on a sewage pipe. A sanitation crew rushed to the area and opened a manhole. So wait. Handprints? The first thing they heard was, help! The crew lowered down a hose to Jesse, who was about 11 feet deep in the pipe. He caught onto the hose and was reeled back up. Rescuers gave him immediate medical attention, including hosing him down to get rid of the sewage and cleaning out his eyes and nose with a sterile saline. Jesse immediately asked for a cell phone to call his family. A worker handed him a phone, and he called his mom. He was happy. The family was happy. I wonder where the mom was. Like, was she at home going, I really hope he doesn't come out of that sewer. Because if I was the mom, I'd be like, yeah, strap me in. Lower me in. I'm doing the thing with the radio where I jump in and I find him. In addition to the massive rescue effort involving more than 100 people, Humphrey credited Jesse for his survival. Not only did he survive getting swept through sewage moving at 15 miles per hour, he managed to find a pocket of breathable air. Oh, yeah. Oh, God. Oh, I just imagined. So you're in the sewer system. If it really is a ton of poop, I imagine it has to be. How are you breathing, right? Even if there is air. Any subterranean location, particularly ones that involves waste, can produce toxic gas, methane, hydrogen sulfide. So breathable air is a key element. The odds of someone falling into such a pipe and surviving are slim. The odds were not in his favor, and many would call it miraculous. Maybe we need to watch the Rescue 911 where this happens. I remember this happening. And we'll do another Rescue 911 reaction video. He has tremendous inner strength. It's obvious he's not a quitter. So, So let's see if there's a video of him.
And then I kept on going. The water took me.
A most important story here, and quite a story. He prayed for a miracle, and that's exactly what he got. 12 hours in a Los Angeles sewer tunnel with no way out. Tonight, NBC4 was the first to talk to this young boy about his story of survival.
NBC4's Rick Montanez tells us the boy isn't returning to school just yet. Rick?
And what an incredible ordeal he went through. Right now, his parents are keeping a close eye on him, on his health, because he spent that 12 hours in raw sewage. Doctors, though, gave him a clean bill of health, and tonight he's happy to just be home instead of where he was 24 hours ago, stuck in that pipe. This is the first image of what many say is a miraculous outcome to a desperate 12-hour search through LA's maze of sewer lines. Jesse Hernandez, alive and hoist.
Boring. Skipping ahead, can I get some information about the kid?
Visible injuries after floating through the 4-foot-wide sewer line for nearly a mile. This footage from that pipe recorded during the overnight.
So, I mean, last week we were talking about water slides. It's to be like, well, if I'm going to die in sewage, at least I got this ride going for me. Now, how is it moving so fast? Like, it must be going downhill because nothing's pushing it, right? Or is it, I guess when you look at a river, you don't always look at it and go, that's very clearly going downhill. And sometimes rivers are moving really quick, right? Because you could look at a river and go, that's fast moving river, but it doesn't look like it's going downhill. I wonder how rivers move.
It was all quiet, but you could just hear the water running through, and you couldn't see anything. It was dark.
South side of the river, walking along the way, checking.
Tried to sleep on one of those tunnels, but he says it was with water, you know, dirty water.
What did it smell like?
It's so nasty.
He's smiling about it now, but he, his family, and the massive team of first responders that worked to save him know this could have ended in tragedy.
Yeah, that would suck. That would be the worst death. You're like, I'm in sewage. I'm really thirsty. I can't drink sewage, obviously. Ooh, okay. That's really bad. So anyway, he's fine, though. Fine as in Like, would you have PTSD from that? Would you go to bed and you wake up and go, the sewage, I can taste it, right? Who is Casey Lawhorn, Tennessee fugitive suspect who admitted killing mother, friend on Facebook?
There's a double homicide that police are investigating, and we want to get right to Caitlin. Caitlin, have we learned any new information since we last checked in with you?
Tim, they are still searching for the suspect in this double homicide. We're going to give you a look at the scene right now. Currently, investigators are looking inside of the home right now. We're here on John Ross Road. You can see the crime scene tape around a house just about.
So we got a guy. Let's just read the article. The body of a Tennessee man wanted after confessing to killing his mom and friend in a lengthy Facebook post has been discovered in Mississippi. Casey Lawhorn was discovered near Vosburgh on Monday morning as of what appeared to be a self-inflicted gunshot wound. Lawhorn had been on the run since posting a lengthy status in which he confessed to shooting his mother when she was too drunk to realize he was trying to kill her. Oh, boy. Posting from what he said was Mississippi, he said he tried to kill his mother, but his gun jammed. Oh, boy. All right. This is not a good story. This is not fun. It's not funny. Don't laugh at this. Let's read the post. Casey James Lawhorn posts on Facebook. Since so many people keep trying to reach out to me on Facebook, I figure I can just say my piece once here and be done with it. Before I start, I need to emphasize that I take full responsibility for my actions. Nothing anyone has or hasn't done to me caused this. My decisions and my failures are my own. This guy seems like he has a lot of autism because of what he says next. Technical details. Nobody starts their murder confession with a headline. Technical details. This morning at around 01:30, right? He doesn't say 1:30 a.m. He says 01:30, :30 at least. It would have been even more autistic if he just went 01:30 hours. This morning, how insane do you have to be posting this Facebook after you did this, right? This morning at around 01:30, I shot and killed my mother and a close friend of mine, Avery Gaines, with a stolen .22 LR. Avery was staying the night to go with me to Epico's Hickson tonight to play Magic the Gathering like we usually do. Autism confirmed. He fell asleep in my living room floor at around 00:30. Again, he doesn't say 30 minutes after midnight. He doesn't say 12:30. He says 00:30. The same time I went to pick my mom up from Bud's Sports Bar on whatever road, my mom was completely wasted. And just like every other time she gets drunk, she goes on and on without prompt about how devastated she'd be if I killed myself. Why? Why would she do that? Hey, Casey. What's his name? Casey. Hey, Casey. You know what? I'm drunk and please don't kill yourself. Well, this is her fault. Once I got her back to our house, I went to my room and grabbed the gun. What? Why? I nervously paced for a few minutes, playing the coming events out in my head, which were vastly different from what actually happened. So he decided, I'm going to pick up my mom. She's so drunk, I'm going to go home and I'm going to shoot her in the face. Right? I walked up to Avery as he slept. Oh, God. He walked up to Avery as he slept. So he's home. He walks up to his friend and shot him in the head once. He seemed to die instantly. My mom was in her room, disoriented from alcohol, barely registered that anything happened. I attempted to shoot her in the bed right then, but the gun jammed. She didn't notice what I just attempted. I left the room and fixed the jam. When I went back into her room, she was out of bed, trying to calm down her... Trying to calm down her dog, Oscar. So the dog's very upset, clearly. I rapidly got off two shots, but I missed anything vital since there weren't any lights on in her room. I saw one entry room wound in her left arm. I'm not sure where the other one went. She started screaming, the worst scream I've ever heard. Ugh, movies don't really do it justice. The gun jammed up again, so I scrambled to get it fixed. She shouted, "You shot me, you've killed me. Why?" Once I got the jam fixed, I turned on the light so I wouldn't miss again. I shot her twice more and it was over. I went back into the living room to take the heroin and cash Avery had on him. The hole in his forehead was so small and not a lot of blood had come out of it. However, thick, dark blood was pouring. Oh, God. Sorry. This is awful. Thick, dark blood was pouring from his nose and bile came out of his mouth. I was shaking from the adrenaline, but I felt nothing other than that, except maybe disgust at the corpse in front of me and the noises it was making. Oh, ah! I reached into his pocket to get out his wallet, grabbed what I wanted, and left the house. This whole event took probably 3 or 4 minutes. I had hoped both were going to be quick and efficient. I didn't want my mom to suffer, to die in horror, to die with the knowledge that her son did it. I didn't hurt our dog or cat, in case anyone was wondering about the animals. All right, that's good. So I don't understand why he's doing this. Maybe we'll figure it out later. There's not too much more to this post, by the way. Maybe it's because he wanted to kill himself this whole time, but he didn't want his mom to have to be so sad that he was dead, so he killed her first? I don't know. People keep saying that suicide isn't worth it, that it isn't too late, that I should turn myself in instead. Well, friends, it is too late. Has been for more than 12 hours now. Not to mention, I've been suicidal since late high school. And it's my opinion that I've been heading to unavoidable tragedy since I started MTSU. I'm not saying the university made me do it, but that the chain of events that I initiated by going there led me here to inevitable suicide. Let's think critically for a minute. Ignoring everything about why I hate myself and why I'm suicidal from before midnight to this morning, just looking at today's events, how should I be expected to not kill myself? Surely any normal person would wish death on themselves after doing what I did, seeing what I saw and hearing what I heard, and all that's waiting for me is a life in prison. Now, he's not wrong at this point. He says, or maybe the death penalty. If I would get the death penalty, then I should definitely kill myself. Otherwise, I'm just wasting tax dollars on lengthy legal processes. Even with that, he's making a little debate here. Even without being executed, just wasting away in prison sounds awful and also a horrible use of state money. And who would look forward to life in prison? I'm almost 24, and that's a crazy amount of time behind bars, and it would be so lonely. I'm sure most of my friends would want to visit me at least once, if for no other reason than to try to understand what I did, but after the first year, I can't imagine I'd have any weekly visitors, not even family, or perhaps especially not family. I can't imagine he's like, and furthermore, what if a black guy trying... Sorry, I didn't mean to bring race into it. I'm not trying to say people don't care about me. I know a lot of you do. It's just that people in general don't keep up a habit of going to visit a friend in prison. Life carries on for everyone else, and the sooner this is all over, then the sooner everyone can move on. If I'm dead by the time you're reading this, you can heal faster than if I'm still around and in court and in prison. He's making good points. Don't give me or my family your thoughts and prayers. No one will be hurt by this more than my brother, Chad. He will probably need a lot of help getting through this. That's really nice of him. If you think you are helping him just by talking to the sky, you are fucking wrong. If you want to help him in this insanely difficult time I'm putting him through, actually do something. Don't just think about it. I'm sorry to him more than anyone. That said, I don't want or need forgiveness from anyone. What I did is unforgivable, and prayer is a waste of time. Nothing happens after death. But if there is a hell, I'm going to be in the lake of ice at the bottom. There's a lake of ice at the bottom of the lake of fire? Wow. Nick is the Jesus of the new millennium. The chat says Nick is Jewish. Bradley says, look at that nose. Does my nose look big on stream? That's not good. I'm going to have a nose reduction. Prayer is a waste of time. I'm going to be in the ice at the bottom. Betrayal of family and betrayal of guests are two of the worst sins. However, as I sit here in Mississippi, writing this on the side of I-59 South after my car broke down, what I look forward to is the nothingness after death. I've spent a lot of time thinking about murder, wondering what it feels like, but I've barely felt anything. Okay. I don't have the list of comments that were made on that. I just have the original post. Can you imagine having typed all that up and then, like, at some point you click send and it goes, error, and then it deletes it, right? I'm sure this guy was smart enough to have written it in a side app, like a text writer, and then copied and pasted it into Facebook. He's not an idiot. He writes 0030, right? Anyway, I don't know why he did it. nobody really seems to know why he did it other than the fact that he self-admitted that he hates himself, and that is because he has such bushy eyebrows. Now, if you get your eyebrows taken care of here, get a little bit of work on that hair, you'd be a sexy man, right, maybe? And then you wouldn't be so depressed. I don't know. That's what I always tell myself. Green Bay Packers wide receiver arrested for a bomb joke at LAX. Trevor Davis was arrested at LAX Sunday morning after cops say he joked about smuggling a bomb into the airport. Law enforcement sources tell us the 24-year-old was at the Hawaiian Airlines ticket counter with a female companion to check into a flight when the attendant asked the usual security questions about their luggage. So they say, do you have any guns, knives, whatever? Instead of playing it straight, Davis turned to the woman and said, did you remember to pack the explosives? She apparently said no and tried to get him to stop. He said, just kidding, but it was too late. We're told the cops were called and Davis was immediately taken into custody for misdemeanor criminal threats. He was booked, mugshot and all, and then released according to this booking sheet, blah, blah, blah. Let's see if there's any more information on this because I forgot to look up. Nope. Only that he's going to be in court on May 3rd. So we'll check that out and see how it goes. They're going to drop it, obviously. But you can. The thing is, you can arrest someone, charge them, and then just drop it later and be like, okay, just kidding. We just wanted to scare you and get you into the news. And also, we wanted to be in the news. Can you imagine? Like, if you're the cops and a famous person does something, right? You're just a cop. You're just some guy. Oh, I'm an airport cop at LAX. Big frickin' whoop. But a famous guy is there, right? Gilbert Gottfried, Justin Bieber, anyone. And they do something that means you can arrest them. All of a sudden, you're kind of in the news for having arrested a famous person. And you can write it off as like, he made a criminal threat. Yeah, definitely. And you can take a famous person into custody and kind of like hang out with them for a bit, right? In the back of the car, don't let them steal the car or anything. But you're technically, like, you're forcing a famous person to be around you? That's crazy. just because you're a cop, you can do that. Just because you're a cop. You go, you're coming with me. I'm a cop. You're way famouser than me and richer. But here we go. You are in my car now. Because I have a thing, a suit, an outfit, right? This is, I can do it. Weird, right? Anyway. So he's arrested. It's going to be fine. I'm telling you it's going to be dropped because nobody takes that serious. You don't. No terrorist goes, hey, you remember to pack the explosives? I'm a mod. Right? The Backpage founders are indicted of charges of facilitating prosecution. Prosecution? A federal grand jury in Arizona has indicted several people behind the classified ads website Backpage.com on 93 counts. If I do the show from back here, can you still hear me? The defendants include blah, 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 all of the people. The website has long been known for its adult services ads, some of which feature children. What? Some of which feature children? I don't think so. Many of the ads published on Backpage depicted children who are victims of sex trafficking, according to the indictment. All right, so this is Andrew's favorite website. Remember when he showed up at that place and the cops were already there? He was just, like, meeting someone. Not for anything that was sexual that I know of. And the cops are like, we know why you're here. And he goes, what? Why? And they go, you heard about this on Backpage. You know about that. And Andrew's like, what? What is Backpage? He had to come to me. He's like, what's Backpage? And I said, that's where you get prostitutes. And he says, oh, that explains why the cops were there. The Backpage servers had been seized and shut down on Friday in a raid by the Department of Justice, FBI, and other federal agencies and attorney general, blah, 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 blah. So if you actually go to Backpage.com, it brings you to a website that says Backpage.com and affiliated websites have been seized. And if you click the, if you click the picture, it takes you to the press release. Now, if you, what the picture is, it's a screenshot of the homepage with the federal, like, thing over it that says it's been seized. But it's funny. The funny part is that someone made this image. Like, someone literally took a screenshot and then put the federal thing on top of it. And then if you check out what the image is called, it's called backpage.com/banner3.jpg. Right? Now, I tried to see by typing in, is there a banner1.jpg? No. Is there a banner2.jpg? No. Banner3.jpg. So whoever in the feds was making this banner image took a screenshot, put this over it, and then messed up two times and finally made banner3.jpg. And that's what the file is named. I don't know why, but that's what it is. So if you head on over to the indictment, introduction, the website www.backpage.com is notorious for being the internet's leading source of prostitution advertisements. Backpage derives the overwhelming majority of its revenue from such ads. These practices have enabled Backpage to earn over $500 million in prostitution-related revenue since its inception. The movie Inception. Backpage was created in 2004 by these people. That person, blah, blah, blah. And they spell out all of the different people who own what amount of whatever. As explained in the details below, the Backpage defendants have utilized a variety of strategies to make it appear that the prostitution ads appearing on Backpage are actually ads for quote-unquote escort services or adult companionship or other lawful activities. For example, Backpage purports to bar customers from offering illegal services and has periodically used computerized filters and human moderators to edit the wording that of ads that explicitly offer sexual services, right? So it's all heavily implied, but apparently that's enough to get yourself arrested and get a 61-page indictment. So here's some of the details from the indictment. There are a whole bunch of, okay, so on or about the dates set forth below, each instance constituting a separate count in this indictment, the District of Arizona and elsewhere, defendants, blah, 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 and others known or unknown to the grand jury, conducted and attempted to conduct in such a financial transaction, which in fact involved the proceeds of specified unlawful activity, knowing that the transaction was designed in whole or in part to conceal or disguise the nature, the location, blah, blah, blah. Count two. Publish an ad depicting victim five entitled Get Freaky Tuesday, Come Spend Your Day With Us. Okay? So we get to read a whole bunch of sexy, sexy titles. Publish an ad entitled 50 Roses, Red Roses Special, Don't Miss Out. Publish an ad entitled Puerto Rican Mammy in Walpole Area in calls. So in call, I think, means that you go to her house. Not that I would know. Another ad entitled Exotic Latina, South Portland Area, ready to play in calls. Bunch of stuff about roses. Gorgeous ebony playmate, perfect curve, skills to make your toes curl. 19. After removing one picture of originally submitted ad, the accompanying text, you agree you are not affiliated with any law enforcement agency. By responding to this ad, you hereby agree you are not a cop. Hot and dripping submissive ebony playmates. Let's see. Absolutely amazing. Come play with me. Number one, most wanted, sweet, sexy playmate. So anyway, come read the indictment. Ready for some fun, Daddy? This is your chance to have an amazing time. And so Backpage is now banned, and I don't know where to get... Just kidding, I do know. Pennsylvania school districts are arming teachers with tiny baseball bats. We are getting near the end of the show. We've been going on for 1 hour. Let's finish up here with a couple of news stories in the wake of the school shooting in Parkland, Florida. Oh, by the way, tangent. If you Google, in quotes, David Hogg is a robot, there's only one hit on the entire internet. Only one person has said those words on the entire internet in that order. So, same thing with Emma Gonzalez's robot. Go Google it.
In the wake of the Parkland school shooting, the Mill Creek School District is arming its 500 teachers with baseball bats.
You know, it's a last resort. It is the last resort, but it is an option and something we want people to be aware of.
This does not make any sense. According to Hall, the 16-inch baseball bats, these are like those souvenir baseball bats you get at the stadium, were distributed to each teacher following an in-service training day on how to respond to school shootings. We passed them out with the goal being we wanted every room to have one of these. Unfortunately, we're in a day and age where one might need to use them to protect ourselves and our... It's not even a full-size baseball bat. But normal baseball bats are not 16 inches. They are a lot bigger than that. Hall said the bats are primarily symbolic, but they are now an option for teachers to use should they need to fight back in a school shooting. What? The association president, John Kachung, says he supports the decision to arm teachers with bats, which will be locked up in each classroom. This is a tool we have in the event of nothing else. Part of the formula now is to fight back, and I think the bats provided for the staff were symbolic of that. Hall says it's just one of several initiatives in the works to ensure student safety, including a concrete barrier around the high school walkway and additional security measures at each entrance. A concrete barrier? What? I don't get it. The district also conducted an online survey to see if the public supports the idea of arming select staff with guns as it is if it becomes legal in Pennsylvania.
According to Superintendent William Hall, the 16-inch bats were distributed to each teacher following an in-service training day on how to respond to school shootings.
We passed them out.
Okay, so a lot of times what happens is the video is shot and recorded, and then they just write the article by transcribing the video, which is what happened. So I'm not going to replay the video, but it looks like they're handing out 16-inch bats to see... I mean, it would work if you swung it fast enough, but why not just have a full-size bat if you're being serious about that? Or why not have a flying bat? If I were a school shooter and they released on me a flying bat or like a bucket of cockroaches or spiders, right? Imagine there's a shooting and you've got a cup of spiders and you throw it at the shooter. I'd be like, ah, get him off. Let's see what this last story is. Oh, sorry. I don't have a last story. This was the Packers wide receiver thing again. So anyway, this has been News with Nick. I'm pretty sure I did not have anything else. I will double check. Sieverman says, Nick is number one on the list of podcasters whose material will most likely be assembled into a terrorism how-to guide. Yes, law enforcement is doing something that doesn't make sense. This is too libertarian. Ooh. Way to give heads up on future school shootings about teachers having bats. Yeah. I mean, if I'm a shooter, I do not go to this school now. There's too many teachers with bats. Right? All right. Thank you for coming to News with Nick. And we will catch up with you next week. It was 13 days between episodes. And that's a good trivia question. How many days since the last episode? It was 13. I don't know why that's helpful at all. And at this point, I'm rambling. So there's no point in living. Bye.
So when the rains come in down, though you can't stand your ground, I won't let you.